20th, 1998. We are sitting in the home of Doris Binstock. Howard Braun and Judy Rubenstein are interviewing.
For the National Council of Jewish Women.
How limited are...
Doris, it's nice to be talking with you. Would you please tell us when you were born?
I was born November 2nd, 1925, in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. And could you tell us who your parents were and where they were from?
Well, my parents were both from Russia.
What part of Russia?
Yes, they were from the area outside of Kiev. They happened to have been cousins, and they were very much in love with each other. They came to this country around 1920 separately. They were married in 1924, and we've always lived in Pittsburgh.
Were they first cousins?
Yes.
Was that unusual at that time for first cousins to marry?
Well, I guess it is unusual for first cousins to marry, but my grandmothers were sisters. And in the state of Pennsylvania, first cousins are not permitted to marry. So they took the name of a third sister and used it on the marriage license so that they would not have to be married outside of the state. My sister-in-law and brother-in-law were first cousins through the fathers, and they were married in Olean, New York, and then came back to Pittsburgh to have the religious ceremony.
Okay.
So if I'm a little strange sometimes, I come by it naturally.
Were they ever worried?
No, not at all.
Genetically?
Not in the least, mm-hmm. No.
Okay. What were your parents' names?
My mother's name was Lena Ortenberg.
Could you spell that, please?
Yeah, O-R-T. Some spell it E-N. Other parts of the family spell it I-N-B-E-R-G. And my father's first name was Joseph.
Mm-hmm. And do you know when your mother was born?
My mother was born July 17th, 1903.
And could you tell us what you know about your mother's family?
Well, my mother was one of five siblings. One is still alive today. She was the eldest daughter and the third child. She was a feisty person, from what I understand, in her youth. When they left Russia, she drove the wagon, and the rest of the family was buried in the hay. And she was about, I guess, 17, 18 years old at the time. And she was blonde, very attractive, with freckles, and a very special lady.
And what was her name?
Lena. Lena.
Mm-hmm.
And why did they come? Why did they leave Kiev?
They left after the war. The Jews were very
after the First World War.
After the First World War. Jews had a very difficult time. They had lived through some pogroms, and I guess, well, my uncle had come before the war. He came in 1913 with his father, and when I guess they had the money to send over for the transportation, on the ship, the rest of them came, except for one brother who stayed in Russia because his wife did not want to leave her family.
Have you had later contact with them?
Interesting that you ask. The spring that my father became ill was the first time my mother had a letter from her brother since the Second World War. And had my father been well, I'm sure they would have gone back to visit. But of course, this letter came in May and my father died in September. Subsequently, we corresponded with this uncle. His daughter moved to Israel. I have met her. She's been here twice. And so we've picked up the threads, and it's very, very nice to be able to say that we have.
And what about your father's? Oh, and your mother's family came here then in what year?
It was either 1920, 1921. They both came about the same time.
Now, you said that your aunt, was driving the wagon.
My mother was driving.
Oh, your mother, okay. Yeah. And the rest were hiding in the hay. Were they sneaking out? Were they?
Yes.
For
yes.
their safety?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Trying to get to the boat?
I guess they went to Warsaw. Now, that was overland. And then I guess after that, I don't know where they really took the boat to come to this country. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Warsaw's a port city or not. I really don't know.
Okay. And tell us about your father's family.
Well, my father was one of five children also. He was the third of the five. He was the youngest of three brothers.
What was his name?
Joseph.
Joseph what?
Dexter. And he too came with his family in the same time, separately. His eldest brother had come here before and had earned the money to go back and get that part of the family. And they all came to Pittsburgh.
Why did they...
Apparently somebody from the family was already here and they came here otherwise. That's what usually made people decide which city they were coming to.
Mm-hmm. And what did they do when they first arrived?
Well, my mother worked in a pants factory for a while, which she didn't like very much. My father, when his brothers went into the food business, and they eventually developed it into a supermarket chain, and they were very, very successful.
Dexter Foods?
It was called Star Market.
Uh-huh.
It was bought out by Loblaw many, many years ago.
And so all through, your father worked there all through your young life?
They were developing this business, uh-huh. And it really grew into a very nice business. One of my most favorite experiences was spending Saturday afternoon with my father when he would go into Beaver Valley to visit the stores that were in that area. And I would just be with him myself, my dad and myself, and we would drive out there to Corey Office in Ambridge, and he would take care of business, and I would have dinner with him and then go to the movie, and it was just nice, just my dad and me. That was special.
When your father came about the same time,
yes.
Did they have any stories why they came, or what
for the same reason. And in those days, Jews were not allowed to stay in Kiev overnight. If you stayed, you had to hide. My father was beaten and chased once, and was lucky that he survived. They had some very unpleasant experiences. My mother...
Anti-Semitism?
Yes. My mother was witness to a pogrom where one of her favorite cousins who lived in the same community as she did was killed. She remembered them killing a baby and things like that. She would never talk about it. And I never could get her to reminisce along those lines. It just was unpleasant. She didn't care for things that were very old. She didn't care for antiques. She didn't care for samovars. I had one once. She was incensed when she saw it, and she asked that I return it, which I did do. She just had very, very bad memories of, I guess, her teen years. In her youth, she talked about happy things, ice skating and playing in the snow and things like that. But I guess as she got older and it got closer to the time of the war, and during the war years, it was very difficult.
Is there anything else of special significance about your parents' family?
Well, it was a close family. Most of them were in the Pittsburgh area. There was one aunt, great aunt, my grandmother's sister, who lived in Chicago.
What was her name?
Her name was Gietel. But the other sisters never came to this country. Those are the only ones that came. And both families were close, my mother's family and my father's family. And it was a very close-knit unit.
Okay, tell us about your life, Doris.
Well, I was born and raised in Pittsburgh. I lived in East End all my life. I went to Peabody High School. I went to the University of Pittsburgh and graduated.
Wait, back up. Tell us about your early years first.
Well, I have one brother who is 3.5 years younger than I am, so they're just the two of us.
And what is his name?
His name is Larry, and he lives in Phoenix, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
My father was the first Ufruf in the B'nai Yisrael synagogue on Negley Avenue. That was in December of 1924. And of
Tell
course,
us what an Ufruf is.
When the groom is called to the Torah to have an aliyah before the wedding. They were married on December 28, 1924. And my dad was the first, the building had just opened then, and my dad was the first Ufruf. And sad to say, the building closed about 2 years ago, and it's now being used for a charter school for the Urban League. It was one of the most beautiful synagogues in Pittsburgh, but I guess that's progress. Nothing stays the same, and you have to just move along with the time.
Architecturally, I think it was the best.
Thank you. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. It was done by Henry Hornbostel, right. Who mm-hmm. also did the Rota Shalom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did Rota Shalom as well. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your early years. Life at home?
It was great. Like all kids, I didn't like Hebrew school. But I had to go. And went to dancing school and did all the things everybody did. It was fun.
Where did you go to elementary school?
Rogers, mm-hmm. which is on Columbus Street in East Liberty. And today it's the School for the Performing Arts.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And you went to high school, the Peabody. Mm-hmm. And when did you graduate?
In June of 42.
Could you tell us about your high school years?
We were fun. I had a good time. I really did. I had a very good time. I was in the National Honor Society, and I did all the things that, you know, the fun things, went to the football games and everything else, had lots of friends. Great time.
Is that the same building that they still have?
Yes. It's been renovated.
So, yeah,
it looks different.
New.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No windows.
Yeah.
And so you had a busy social life, it
yeah.
sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Were your friends mostly Jewish?
I had Jewish friends and non-Jewish friends and black friends. It was an integrated community, and color never made any difference to any of us. And I remember once I went to the Jonas Studio. There were photographers, still in business today. But Mr. Jonas was a refugee from the Holocaust, and Mrs. Jonas was a very Teutonic lady. And when I walked in one afternoon with a black girl, she was absolutely appalled that I would be associating with a black girl, which gives you an idea of the differences in the standards of someone who had a very sheltered existence in Europe and then came to this country. But I've always been very open and about my associations, and color has never made any difference to me, and I've known some wonderful people across this island.
Were you active in some youth organizations then?
Yes, I was. I was active in the school things, and I was active in hospital aid, started a junior organization at that time. And I was the president of it. And I remember when I was a freshman at Pitt, I went to a luncheon, all dressed up to college, you know, to classes, to go to the luncheon with the ladies. It was very interesting. It was my first exposure, I guess you would say, to volunteerism of that kind. And I guess it must have made an indelible impression, because I've been walking that path ever since.
And what was your religious education like?
I went to B'nai Yisrael Sunday School and Hebrew School. I was confirmed. I was an honor student at confirmation and have a medal, the Rabbi Benjamin A. Lifter Memorial Medal to prove that. And I've always had deep feelings for my Judaism. It's always meant a great deal to me. And
how did you practice in the home?
We had a kosher house. I keep a kosher house. I didn't know about anything else when I was a kid and go out to lunch with friends. I always had a lettuce and tomato sandwich. I've strayed from that, and I do eat out, but I still keep kosher at home. But that was unusual in those days.
Did you observe Shabbat?
Well, my father was not Shomer Shabbos. And as I said before, my greatest fun on Saturday was spending the day with him, and of course that was riding and everything else, so we were not that observant.
Were there any rabbis or teachers that were especially important to you?
Well, Rabbi Lichter was a very special...
Rabbi who?
Lichter. L-I-C-H-T-E-R, yeah.
His first name was?
Ben Lichter, Benjamin Lichter. He was a very special individual, and as I said many times, when you had a sad occasion and he came, it made it easier to take, and when you had a happy occasion and he shared it with you, it made it more pleasurable. He was very special. And then in the early 40s or late 30s, Candor Heiser came to Pittsburgh. Now, he was also a survivor. And he also came from Germany, H-E-I-S-E-R.
And his first name?
Mordecai. And he was also a very special gentleman. And he was at B'nai Yisrael until the time that he passed away.
Do you want to talk a little bit about why Cantor was as special?
Well, I guess it's... as I got older and then I was married and belonged to B'nai Yisrael, and my husband and I both became active in the synagogue. I guess it was just part of our life, and it meant a lot to us. And having known these men since I was a little girl, it was just like extended family to me.
Was there a special soul or something that he evoked?
It's hard to put it into words. It's just a feeling, a good feeling. It's difficult to verbalize those kinds of feelings. I really can't. I haven't thought about it in that way. I guess that's the reason I can't.
But obviously they were happy thoughts.
They were, very good. Mm-hmm. You're very fortunate when you have people like that who sort of go through many years of your life with you. And it's like family. It's like another uncle, another person that you love, loves you.
Do you recall how large the congregation was during that period, about?
Which period are you referring to?
You tell me.
The early years?
Anything you want to say.
The early years of the congregation, I really don't know. I can talk about the years when my husband was president,
okay,
and then when I was president.
Mm-hmm.
Am I skipping too far?
No, give me that number.
Merv was president of the synagogue in the 60s, and the membership was up to 800.
800?
Families? Do you remember approximately about how many families there might have been there during the war years?
That's enough one.
Well, I tell you, the 800 number was during the height of the...
Max.
With Staten Heights. Mm-hmm. When the Heights had a lot of young people, with an influx of Jewish people to that new residential development, and that's when B'nai Yisrael was at its height.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, B'nai Yisrael was always a congregation of about 400 or 500 people. Families, rather, I should say, not people.
You graduated, you said, in 1942, so it was obviously during World War II.
Yes, it was, 6 months after.
Can you tell us about the war years?
Well, I remember listening to the radio when they announced the bombing of Pearl Harbor. I remember the assembly at school on Monday when the president declared war. I remember
Did you have friends that went into the war? Were there a lot of changes in your life once the war started?
There were some changes. Everything was rationed. Sugar was rationed. Gas was rationed. Nylons came out, but you couldn't get them. I was fortunate. My family was in the food business, so that we really didn't have the shortages that other people, you know, had. So things were, well, for me, were pretty much the same as they had been before.
Was your brother in service?
No.
Would you say you were probably a little more privileged economically many people?
I would think so. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So that you never felt needy for anything? Never. Gas
no.
or anything
no.
like that?
No.
And can you even describe what life was like culturally then?
It's a little hard. I was in college. There weren't too many fellas on campus at the time. I had already met my husband. I was dating him. We were married before the war was over. We were both in school. We were married in 44.
Date.
September 3rd. I was in a sorority in college. I had a good time. I was a member of Quains, which was a sophomore honoree society. I was a member of Mortar Board. I was active on campus. I was active in the women's activities. And I had a good time in school. I really did.
Were you in a sorority?
Yes. I was a Phi Sig. I was a Phi Sig.
What? Tell us about that.
Oh, that was fun. It really was. We had a good time. Fortunately, I'm still friends with some of the same people that I was then. And I wasn't really affected very much by the war, fortunately for me. I knew a couple of friends who lost their lives, but I really didn't have anyone real close to me who was in the service. My husband had a cousin who was in New Guinea for 5 years, but that was the closest that I knew of anyone who really had the difficulties during the service. My brother was younger, and the war was over before he was ready.
And
so he
neighbors
didn't.
Or.
Mm-mm. No.
Boys,
it was kind of a shelter. There was someone I knew who, you know, fellow that I had gone to Sunday school with who was lost.
Mm-hmm.
Several people, many of them, my friends were in the service, but fortunately everybody came home, which was very good.
You were talking about how sheltered you were even from the war a bit.
To a degree.
Did you have any idea at all what was going on with the Jews in Europe?
Well, when everyone else found out, we found out too.
And when would that be?
I imagine it must have been in the early 40s when the reports were coming back. I remember the one speaker that I heard, can't remember his name right now, who talked about President Roosevelt not wanting to. The Germans wanted money for trucks, and they would release the Jews. He wouldn't do it. And then as more and more information came out about it, it became much more familiar. When we were married and my husband was in the service, we were stationed in Washington, D.C. at Walter Reed. And then we met a lot of other servicemen and heard a lot of things that probably would not have heard had we not been in the Washington area, you know.
Was this in 1944 still? Or
46, 47, 48.
Oh, after the war. This was after.
Mm-hmm.
But I was even talking about
during the war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I worked on bonds. We sold bonds. I got an award at Pitt for selling bonds, sketches of the nationality rooms. I was always involved with it and did everything I could to help whatever, you know, you could do as a college kid in those days. But actually, unless you were a family that had somebody in the service or lost somebody, it was difficult, but I was lucky, very, very lucky.
Can you describe Pittsburgh at the time?
Dirty. The coal town. I was familiar with the coal towns because my father had stores in the Mon Valley and Allegheny Valley, and most of those towns were steel mill towns and coal towns. And before the war, they suffered from the Depression. And when I go through some of those communities today, I'm really delighted to see how perked up they are, how the streets are clean, buildings are look nice, and compared to what they used to look
name,
like.
Name a couple of those towns you just said.
Oh, Sharpsburg is one. Even Verona looks better than it did. Going out to the new synagogue now in Fox Chapel, going by Harmerville, those little areas were little row houses that were just dingy and just dreadful looking on old Freeport Road. And they look much better now than they did then. And all the little communities along the river valleys have perked up a little bit, a great deal after the war. And
what about the Mon Valley?
I'm not as familiar with that, but it did too, I'm sure. But as I said, my uncle went to the Mon Valley stores, and my dad did the Allegheny Valley stores, and those are the ones I'm most familiar with.
So they had stores in all these little towns?
It was a supermarket chain, yes.
And they were called?
Star Market.
Star Market, then.
Mm-hmm.
All the movies. And they had managers?
Mm-hmm.
In about how many?
They had 20-some stores, if I remember correctly. For nostalgia, I remember the flood of 36. My dad was in a rowboat and caught the register as it was going to float out the door of the store. And I remember helping him wash the money when he brought it home, washing the silt off the dollar bills and the coins. That's all I can remember about the flood. I mean, just, you know, what he brought home. But I remember years later, my father's company had a warehouse down on the Strip District on 23rd Street. It used to be right next to Auto Milk Company. And in those days, every time there was a lot of rain, there would be floods. And I remember one day working down there and standing on the street and watching the water reach up to the railroad tracks. It's very close to where Benkowitz is now. And you could just see the water inch up to the railroad tracks. And fortunately, it didn't come across the street. Water's insidious away with flooding, but fortunately we don't have that as much anymore.
Do you recall at all any health problems that people had, or?
Well, in those days, all of the childhood diseases were supposedly contagious. So whenever you had one, you either had to go in quarantine and have a sign put on the outside of your house, or you were sent to Municipal Hospital, which is up where the dental school is now, because the dental school is in that old building.
And what kind of diseases would you see?
Measles, mumps, chickenpox, pneumonia. When my brother had pneumonia, they put a red sign up, which frightened the neighbors. And sometimes they would put a skull up with their crossbones, you know, to stay away. And people were really frightened. My mother never would let us go to the hospital. She kept us at home. And when I had scarlet fever, she got a nurse to stay with me so she could be free to be with my brother, and was in quarantine with this nurse for 30 days. And then 2 months later, my brother got it, and she sent me to my grandmother's so I wouldn't have to miss school, but I didn't want to stay there. In the middle of the night, my uncle had to bring me home, and I missed another month of school while he had the scarlet fever. But the whole theory about the diseases and the contagion has changed in those years. But that was one thing that sticks in my mind, the way the neighbors would react when you had a sign on your door that somebody was sick. But everybody went through that.
To finish, you were talking about college earlier. What did you major in?
Sociology.
Mm-hmm. And you graduated in?
I accelerated and I graduated in August of 45 when my husband graduated from dental school.